This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're on location today with Robert Ertman. He is a teacher of the haiku. He is also a Zen teacher. And today he's going to talk about the haiku and tell its origins, what it means to him, and how it goes with the practice of Buddhism. First of all, we want to know, Bob, why did you get involved with haiku as a life's work as a poet?
Well, my wife had a student at the Naval Academy, Kylan Jones Huffman. And after he became a naval officer, he began writing haiku. I knew him and liked him. He went to Iraq after he had been in the Naval Reserves, could have gone to a very comfortable position on a cruiser, very safe, but instead volunteered to be forward attached to a Marine unit, an intelligence unit. He was killed there in a traffic jam, and I was moved by his final haiku, read some more of his haiku, and started trying to write haiku. His final haiku was uncomfortable, body armor shifting on the car seat. They put body armor on the car seats because the greatest danger they feared was mines in the roads.
The voice of Bob Ertman. He is a Zen teacher and also a poet. And today we're finding out the combinations that make this his life's work. What is a haiku?
Well, a haiku is hard to define. It's not what you learned when you were in third grade. It's not a short poem of 5, 7, and 5 syllables. Not a short poem with a nature reference. There was a time when that is the way haiku was taught in this country, in North America, and a good haiku had 5, 7, and 5 syllables, and it had a nature reference, and if you had that, you had yourself a good haiku, except you really didn't. Mm-hmm. You had something that was pretty worthless, and that's why haiku fell out of favor among poets. There was just nothing to them.
Mm. I would like you to read us a haiku and just take it apart and tell us why it matters where the invisible bridge is and give us the reason for its being, why it is the essence of poetry.
Basho is generally thought of as the greatest of the Japanese haiku masters. I'd like to read a couple of his. Cicada's Voice. No sign of dying soon. You see that there is a pause in there. There's an emptiness in the middle of that haiku. And that emptiness is where the reader can find the meaning. You'll also notice that's not 5, 7, and 5 syllables.
Would you read it again?
Cicada's Voice. No sign of dying soon.
What does that mean to you?
I like cicadas. I listen to them in the summer. I listened to them when I was growing up. We called them locusts back then. I'd never heard of a cicada until I was an adult. But I knew there were these things that seemed very much alive, very live. Mm-hmm. But you'd find them dead the next morning. Mm. And that is the shortness of life, the shortness of a very full life.
Were the haiku masters, such as Basho, from whom we learn, were they connected to a spiritual practice?
Mostly they were. They were not all Zen practitioners. And in Japan, then and now, meditation was practiced in monasteries. People outside monasteries may have had a relationship with Zen, but they didn't sit and meditate. But they were aware of Zen sensibilities. And the Zen sensibilities carried over into all of Japanese life.
What is a Zen sensibility?
Well, it's an awareness of emptiness, how much meaning can be found in the emptiness. It's aware of the temporary nature of life. Nothing is permanent.
Bob Ertman, I'm Grace Cavalieri. And continue and read us some more, please.
This is Basho again. Such stillness. The voice of the cicada sinks into the rocks. There are other translations of this haiku that I also like. It's hard to get the exact feeling of a haiku when it's translated, but the voice of the cicada drills into the rocks. Such stillness. The voice of the cicada sinks into the rock.
How present do you have to be to hear that and to write that?
You have to be present, really fully present, to write it. But reading it helps you be present in that moment. It helps bring us back to that moment when we're sitting, listening to the cicadas very loud, wherever we are in the summer, wherever we're outside, listening to the loudness of the cicadas. Another one from Basho. This road, no one goes down it. Autumn evening. And a little different translation. No one walks this road. Autumn evening.
Why is that about impermanence?
This haiku is one of the ones that, to me, says everything that I really want to hear about the inevitability of my own death.
Do you wish to read more Basho? Do you have some more Basho?
Yes.
Let's go on with that.
On a bare branch, a crow has settled. Autumn evening. Now, I've heard this explained and talked about, and I wish I had come up with this statement. But this haiku doesn't say, on a bare branch, a crow has settled. Specter of death. Haiku don't need to hit us in the face. The poet should not grab the listener by the lapels and shout in their face. Autumn evening says enough. On a bare branch, a crow has settled. Autumn evening. That's all I need to hear anyone say to me about the inevitability of my own death. All that most of us want to hear about the inevitability of our own death.
That needs a context. I have to say that Bob Ertman is part of the Zen peacemakers who go every year and sit in meditation at Auschwitz. They sit outside in November in the cold and in the rain, and they drink the soup that was made somewhat like that was fed to the prisoners of Auschwitz. First of all, I'd like you to explain that experience, why you do it, and then we would like to hear some work that came out of that.
Well, I practice Zen with the Zen peacemakers. And one of the things we do is bear witness at Auschwitz and at other places of great trauma. At Auschwitz, we sat beside the railroad tracks where the selections were made. Who was going to be sent immediately to the gas chambers and who was going to be kept until they were worked to death and starved to death. I'm sure you've seen the picture of the railroad tracks and the entrance to Auschwitz in the background. We do that to bear witness. Bear witness to what people can do. Bear witness to the tragedies of the world. But we also bear witness to the joys of the world. And there was some joy at Auschwitz. There were families there. Some families survived. The Nazi guards documented the experiences of Auschwitz, took photographs, some very good photographs, which really stunned me at how someone could be so insightful and to take these photographs and select these photographs and still do what they were doing. But these were put in an album, miraculously survived the war, found under a bunk in some guards' chambers. And one of them shows a group of Hungarian Jews who were being forced to wait in a grove because the capacity of the gas chambers had been outstripped by the number of people there. So people were waiting their turn for the gas chambers. And there's a small child holding out a flower, offering it to another child. Joy and goodness right there. And we need to bear witness to that as well as all of the things that were done at Auschwitz. Mm. Now, I'm not sure if that short haiku does require more context, although I do give it more context because I put it in a series of three. Did the guards sing Stille Nacht? Which guards might that have been? The idea of guards singing Stille Nacht? Wondering whether they sang Stille Nacht. I think that places that at Auschwitz or at one of the other Nazi death camps. But I don't worry about whether my readers appreciate my haiku in the same sense that I meant them. I wrote it for myself. I hope it conveys something. If it doesn't convey something to someone, that's all right. They can read another haiku or read something else.
Well, I think you have hit it on the head because we have to write for ourselves. We can't think through other people's minds. And it is your essence and your spirit that's conveying the language. So I would like to hear a couple of more of your own, but you have to read them more than once because they do go by quickly. And then just tell us where you were when you saw this, and how present you had to be to capture it.
This is the most recent haiku I wrote. And we were driving back from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where we'd been at a haiku conference, Haiku North America. And I saw a sign from the highway. It said, Hospice Thrift Shop. Big letters. So I thought about that as we drove along, and I found the second line. So the haiku is, Hospice Thrift Shop, his second best suit. Hospice Thrift Shop, his second best suit.
You say one line and then another line. Is that your standard practice?
Ordinarily, I write with three lines rather than two. But an important characteristic of haiku is that they have two parts, not one. Hospice Thrift Shop does not make a haiku. The Old Pond. that does not make a haiku. Autumn evening, not a haiku. The haiku needs two parts. The most common form is in English is a fragment and a phrase in either order. But two parts, neither of the two parts a full sentence. 5 a.m. looking for a taxi. The Nightingale. I wrote this coming back from Croatia. I also write haiku about my cats. It's a good thing to have nature really embedded in the haiku. And cats are probably as close as we get in an urban environment to nature rid of tooth and claw. So I write about my cats, not fuzzy sweetness, but about cats. Each cat eating the other's dinner, enjoying it. Each cat eating the other's dinner, enjoying it. The cat, aware of the suffering of the mouse. The cat, aware of the suffering of the mouse. Sharing the cat's joy, aware of the suffering of the mouse. Sharing the cat's joy, aware of the suffering of the mouse.
Once you said it's something, and then it's something about that. So you're really demonstrating that. You say something, and then the next line is something about that. And as I listen to you, it is tracking exactly as you said that.
That's what I do with almost all of my haiku. There are poets who say that a haiku should consist of two concrete images and not a comment on one of them. But I tend to favor saying something about one of the images. I just don't agree that the haiku have to be two concrete images. One of my favorites from Issa, who is the most beloved of the haiku poets, not quite as highly regarded as Basho, but more beloved. He wrote, "My dead mother, every time I see the ocean, every time, my dead mother, every time I see the ocean, every time."
What does that mean to you?
That means that the dead that we love are with us, that there is a continuation of life. Now, that poem by Issa, it's not quite two concrete images. He didn't say, "My dead mother, the ocean." But also he didn't say, "My dead mother, I think of her often." There is a concrete image in that second part, but it's still a comment on the first part. "Feeling old, a girl gives me her seat on the metro." Feeling old, a girl gives me her seat on the metro.
Must we have an image? Must we have an image?
Well, I think an image is an important part of haiku as I see them and as I write them. Because I write as a practice of being fully present in the moment. And there has to be something there. And then there is a comment on it or another image, and the two images make a whole.
Talk more about being present in the moment and how that involves the way you live your life as a Zen teacher, as a Buddhist practitioner, and as a poet. How do those three things really come together as the way you live every day? To be present, to be in the moment, just this.
A pair of downy woodpeckers. The red-tailed hawk takes one. A pair of downy woodpeckers. The red-tailed hawk takes one. There's life, and all of a sudden, there's not. Winterberry among 50 shades of brown. Winterberry among 50 shades of brown. And remembering what Faulkner said, the past isn't history. It isn't even past. That day, almost eclipsing Antietam. That day, almost eclipsing Antietam.
So your first line was that day, and the second line was almost eclipsing Antietam. Mm-hmm. Will you talk about that?
Those who think about it shouldn't have any trouble understanding what day that was. Antietam was the deadliest day on American soil, and September 11th was almost the deadliest day on American soil. And the past is still here.
We're with Bob Ertman. He is a Zen teacher and a practitioner, a Buddhist practitioner. And he makes a daily practice of being present in the moment. And that culminates in seeing and then committing what he sees to paper. And he's going to tell us just a bit about meditation and its alliance with the haiku.
I sit and meditate every day. I begin just bringing my attention to my breath. The breath is always right here, right now. It's never anywhere else. It's never any other time. It's just right here, right now. And not drifting off to thoughts about what we could be doing or thoughts about what we had done. Not thinking about the past, trying to make it come out better than it did. Just sitting right here. Right now. And when we see something and write a haiku about it, we're paying attention to the present moment. That present moment is a little more complicated than looking at your watch. Here's another haiku about the complexity of the present moment. The live oak tree, 100 years ago, the lynching. The live oak tree, 100 years ago, the lynching.
Was it important to put the word live in there? I think so.
I think it was. It was a live oak tree. Live oak trees have... significant branches that are fairly low, just the right height for hanging someone, either judicially or not.
We're going to be reading a final haiku because we've been spending this time with Bob Ertman, who is a Zen teacher and a haiku poet, and has combined his life to be fully aware of its living. So let us have a final haiku.
I have a haiku series that I wrote about my time at Auschwitz. Besides sitting beside the tracks, we spent some time in the museum in one of the barracks at Auschwitz. And there's a display of photographs taken from the suitcases of arriving people. These are late arrivals because most of the photographs were destroyed immediately. There was also a display of clothing, which was taken to be sent back to the Reich. And there were piles of shoes, huge, huge piles of shoes. These things are also displayed at the Holocaust Museum in Washington. But the shoes, which were once shiny, are now a huge pile of deteriorating, muddy, dusty, blackish brown, were once shiny black. But here and there in these piles are spots of bright red. The enameled shoes survived much better than the black shoes. Some of these are high heels. Others are clearly little girl shoes. And there were little girls' dresses among the clothing put on display. So I wrote this. Auschwitz. Pretty little girl with the red dress on. Auschwitz. Pretty little girl with the red shoes on. Auschwitz. Pretty little girl.
The voice of Bob Ertman. The program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the Sinipet Fund. Mike Turpin is our engineer. I'm Grace Cavalieri.